We're back on Big Board Sports on a Tuesday. NFL training camps opening today. And that's music to my ears. I'm ready to go. When that happens, that means we are closing in, seriously closing in on a new season. Matt Parrino all over the Buffalo Bills. Syracuse.com, big Buffalo Bills beat writer, and a regular guest, I would say. We're going to put Matt on the payroll here pretty soon. Matt, how are you, my friend?
I'm great. Just get final preparations. Going to head out to Fisher in the morning, 6 a.m. It's football season, boys.
Yeah, it is.
Gets no better than that.
No doubt is. So I guess one of the headlines has to be James Cook, right? The contract and whether he didn't get the extension yet, and is he going to be a no-show at training camp?
No, I mean, the report out right now, which lines up with what James said back at minicamp, is that he will be there. I think it comes down to, like, does he want to try a hold-in tactic? Which, I don't know. Like, I think once he gets there, the idea of that, if they're too far off, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because what's the end game there? He wants to play this season. He wants to, you know, add to the value as he goes into a contract year and then a big potential payday next offseason. And I just don't think it makes a lot of sense. And, you know, how much he wants to remain in Buffalo, I mean, I guess maybe that is a big part of it, because, you know, you want a deal done, you want some self-assurance that you're going to be in one place. But he also sold his house this offseason. So I think he's kind of preparing for the two sides not coming together on a deal. And it's complicated.
Yeah.
It's not just the Bills don't want to pay James Cook. It's they're paying their quarterback $60 million, and they've handed out four other big-time extensions this offseason. And running back is just one of those positions where to pay top of the market at the position, I mean, you have to have a guy that's like of the Saquon Barkley ilk. And I just don't know, as good as James Cook is, as important as he is to their offense, I'm not sure he necessarily checks all those boxes. And so I think they're going to get to a point where they're just going to have to say, let's do a goodbye tour here over the next season, try to win a Super Bowl, and then go out and get your money.
Yeah. Well, he's not a happy man. He's not a happy human being right now, Matt. He was in Albany a couple of weeks ago, and I would say in terms of being media friendly, he wasn't even close. I don't know how you deal with him. I don't know what he's like at camp. I don't know his personality. But he was not in a great mood when he came through the Capital Region a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and that's kind of funny to me, because first of all, he's a man of very few words. I mean, going back to his rookie year, he is not somebody that he'll go to a podium session where we'll probably spend, I don't know, 12 minutes with Josh Allen, where you're lucky if you get 2 to 3 minutes out of James Cook. He just doesn't have a lot to say usually. But he has definitely been a bit prickly this offseason. And, you know, a lot of this comes down to your camp, your reps, his brother who went through his own kind of wars for contracts over the course of his career. You have a lot of that at play here. And I think James Cook, behind all of this, is really just about playing ball. And would love that this stuff could take care of itself and he wouldn't have to talk about it, and it wouldn't have to be this big headline every single week or different headline every single week. But that's not the world we live in. And he's out there, politicking for the deal that he thinks he deserves. And what comes along with that is getting asked about it. And when, you know, you go to have a camp, and you know, I heard some similar things about his appearance. I believe it was either in Rochester or here in Buffalo. I can't remember. And he just was a little bit prickly. And it's just, I don't know, I get it. It's hard to separate the two things, but you really have to. I mean, usually these things take care of themselves one way or the other.
Matt, listen, and you also, honestly, I've been around it a long time. You're representing the Buffalo Bills and their organization. And I get you don't want to talk about the contract and all that. Totally fine. But at least talk about the Buffalo Bills and the team and the excitement leading up to a new season, or give something. If you're going to go on the road and represent the Bills and you're coming to an area like the Capital Region that's loaded up with Bills fans, at least turn on the charm, even if you don't really mean it. How about that?
100%. And I think you probably would have gotten that a year ago, no excuse. And here's the thing, too. To your point, if you're going to go have public appearances during this time, you have to be prepared for that. And maybe alter your plans a little bit if you decide you can't really give what you need to give. Because that's not a good experience for anybody on either side of things, him included.
Yeah, it's he was disappointing, to say the least, a couple of weeks ago. But I don't know him, so write it off to just the contract and not in a good mood and a lot of things happening with James Cook. But that's certainly one of the headlines you're walking into. What else are you looking for when you touch down there tomorrow?
Yeah, I think the Maxwell Harrison summer is upon us, right? I mean, we've been here before with the Bills, drafting a cornerback in the first round. The Kyer Elam experiment didn't really necessarily work out. They trade him 3 years later, and then they go out and they draft his long-term replacement. But they're not really keen at that spot, especially giving rookies the full job right from the jump. Like, I mean, Tre'Davious White was in a spot in 2017 where there just wasn't a lot of depth on the roster. And so I feel like he played in, like, because there wasn't a lot of other options. Elam, he doesn't end up winning the job outright. He ended up splitting time with Benford their rookie season. And again, as much as they like Benford, he wasn't on the field 100% of the snaps. So I'm really keen to see how Harrison assimilates into the training camp, like, because now the pads are going to come on in a couple days. How does he look in full speed drills? Does he have a handle on the playbook? Was he able to get a download? Because incrementally over the spring, it felt like lights were going on every single day. And so now you got to see, like, all right, when you walk into the house, how many lights are still on and how many you got to try to figure out how to turn back on and quit? Because we're 45 days away from the start of the season. Like, they don't have a ton of lead-up time to get these guys ready. And a lot of times, these young players struggle, and if they miss any time, that's another part of this. He missed a little bit of the spring. He was dealing with the hamstring injury at the end there. He can't have that linger into the summer, because we saw last year Cole Bishop miss a little bit of time, and then he didn't start the season.
Talking with Matt Parrino, covers the Buffalo Bills with Syracuse.com here, and also co-hosts the Shout podcast. Joins us for a few on Big Board Sports, 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio, and, of course, the free 104.5 The Team app with the Cap Region's home for Buffalo Bills football. Matt, how big of a year could you see Bills tight end Dalton Kincaid having? Well, certainly a lot of buzz and hype around him heading into this season. Maybe a little chip on his shoulder heading in. How big of a year, realistic expectations for a guy in Dalton Kincaid coming into this year?
This has got to be the year for Kincaid. Mm. You know, tight ends are a funny position. There's so much that's thrown on your plate. I mean, as I've covered the team and been on an NFL beat now for 8 years, it's amazing to me how much we don't talk about how much is on a tight end's plate. They're in the tight end room during the week doing meetings. They're in the offensive line room during the week during meetings. And they're in the wide receiver room during meetings. And at times, some of them, Dawson Knox, I would imagine Kincaid, they spent some time with the running backs as well. So it takes a while sometimes for guys to truly find their stride in the league. And for Kincaid, with the injury last year, he took a step back. And what I think is at least got to be encouraging for the Bills is he's not running away from that fact, and he knows he has to be better. His quarterback knows he has to be better. And Allen is putting it on himself too, like, I got to be better for him. And so I think that's been a big emphasis this offseason, is Allen and Kincaid developing that rapport. They're already really close and good friends, but I think just being around each other, throwing with each other, all the little things that can maybe take this thing to the next level, they're doing that. They're doing all of those things this offseason. And I don't know how much bigger Kincaid is aesthetically. Like, I don't know if you look at him and say, man, that guy looks like he's put on some muscle. But he's been in the room. He's got a strength and conditioning program with Will Greenberg, the head of training now for the Bills, and he's really happy about it. They've developed a really good relationship. He feels like he's finally past the injury. He's been able to really focus in on, you know, the training, getting his body ready, because it is a grind. It is. They're going to ask him to do a little bit of everything. This is a first-round draft pick. He's going to have to block. He's going to have to play through some injuries, as Dawson Knox has over his career. They need him to be a guy, because if you look in that wide receiver room, and it's not enough impact guys that you can count on. Now, it worked last year. Everybody ate. Mac Hollins ended up being a lot more than they figured. But going into this thing, outside of like Keon Coleman, Khalil Shakir, who's that really good player in the slot, there's a lot of question marks about this group. And if Kincaid can become a top-tier tight end or even a second-tier tight end in the NFL, I think that is a really good thing for the Bills offense.
I know we haven't even started training camp yet, but do you have in your mind an early season, preseason prediction on maybe a win-loss record for Buffalo? Do you believe that this is the year they get over the hump, get past the Chiefs, and get to the Super Bowl?
I think I think they're going to win. It's hard. I think 13, 14 games. I think they have a good roster. I think they got a really good schedule. Like, that's the biggest piece for me, is that the four heavy hitter, heavyweight fights are spread out throughout the season. They open with Baltimore. They play KC. They play Cincinnati. There's one more in there that's escaping me. But they're spread out over the course of the season. And that's massive. Like, last year they had to play a couple of, you know, big-time games back-to-back. And, you know, you just hoping to split those games. I remember the Detroit Rams game back-to-back. They played about as good of an eight quarters as you can play. If you remember that game out in L.A., it went down to the wire. The final score was like 46-42. They come back the next week. They beat the Lions in Detroit. So, I mean, this is a good team that I think has gotten better. I mean, we haven't talked about the defense yet. I think that's the area that really has me thinking this could be a Super Bowl contender, a true Super Bowl contender against some of the elite quarterbacks. I mean, Joey Bosa gets the headlines, and rightfully so. If he's healthy, if he can stay healthy for any stretch, especially in January, that's helpful. But they threw a lot of darts on their defensive line, signing Larry Ogunjobi, Michael Hoyt over from the Rams, who's a bit of a chess piece, drafted three new pieces on their defensive line, and TJ Sanders, Deion Walker, and Landon Jackson, who they're really excited about on the outside. He's huge, guys, by the way. When you get out on the practice field with Landon Jackson, they got some big dudes. I mean, like, Greg Rousseau is an absolute towering edge rusher. Jackson is right there, and there's a lot of people excited about him and what he can potentially be. Year one's tough to project for pass rushers, but with all of those dart throws, if a couple of them stick on the board, and the closer to bullseye that you get, I think that you have a chance to affect some of these elite quarterbacks in the AFC. And that, to me, is like got to be the key ingredient to them getting over the hump against the Chiefs.
Looking forward to it all unfolding, Matt Parrino. We appreciate you, as always, coming on ESPN Radio in Albany and a station that carries the Buffalo Bills. We are carrying the Bills again. Is that?
Yes.
Is that
100%? Yep, yeah. Confirmed.
We're locked in. We got the Bills here every Sunday. So, Matt, thank you for joining us. Enjoy training camp. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Take care, guys.
Take care. Thanks, Matt. Matt Parrino, Syracuse.com on the Buffalo Bills. It's the start of hour number two. We got a lot going on here in the 518. Saratoga rolls back into action tomorrow. We're all over it. A week from today, we will be at Giants training camp in East Rutherford, New Jersey. And then, of course, we agonize through the baseball season. The Yankees, the Mets, the Red Sox. We got 60 games left.
Just about
get
there.
Me to the playoffs. Please,
October,
get me to
baby.
The playoffs.
October.
When it really counts.
Yeah.
All right? How about that? Let's welcome Emmanuel Barbari to our show on 104.5 The Team, and part of the big part, man, big part of the Yankee Radio Network and SNY. I see him doing TV work, mm-hmm. and then it'll soon be time for Siena basketball. Busy man, Emmanuel. Good morning. How are you?
Thanks for having me, guys. Always good to talk to you.
Of course.
Yeah, all good, Emmanuel.
Of course.
Yeah.
We'll start with the Yankees. What state of mind are you in right now when you watch this team? Obviously coming off a very difficult loss last night with another poor performance in the field, especially by Anthony Volpe.
Well, the pulse of the fan base, they're 55-45 through the 100-game mark that you're talking about. The pulse is like 45-55. I think that's the way you look at it, because they played two really good months, and Aaron Boone actually was very honest in his assessment last night post-game. Now, it has been a month plus now. They haven't played good baseball. Think about the sweep they had in Kansas City in the middle of June. They go to Boston, and it was really that Boston series moving forward off of that. They haven't played good baseball for a while now. We've seen glimpses last homestand before they fell flat those last couple of games to the Cubs. But overall, it hasn't been fundamentally sound. They haven't run the bases the same way they ran it. They run the bases early in the year. The areas we expected them to improve from last year, and they did for a couple of months there, have been a total 180 and opposite this last month or so. And you pile on top of that, they've taken some hits pitching-wise with Clark Schmidt, with Cruz and Leiter and the bullpen, which sort of exacerbates the need at the trade deadline. But the left side of the infield, of course, the story last night. But that's really been a problem all year, guys. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. You look at the defense left side of the infield, especially with some of the ground ball pitchers they have on the staff, it just hasn't been good enough all year.
Yeah, no, it has not been. And Booney just continues to stick up for Anthony Volpe, and I get it. I mean, that's what he does. I'm not surprised. He does that with all of his players, but it's been rough watching Volpe in the field. And last night was disappointing only because Emmanuel, he's coming off a great weekend, right? At the plate, start that second half of the year. He had a monster weekend, at least I thought, at the plate, and maybe that would get him, you know, in the right frame of mind for the field, but it didn't work out last night.
Yeah, that's what's frustrating about this. Not only did that game on Saturday in Atlanta, that could have been a season changer. You know, we may look back at that game and think they lose that game, they lose the series going into Toronto, they're down big in that game, they come back behind Anthony Volpe. That's the type of game that can turn your fortunes within a stretch, within a season, but also turn Volpe's season a little bit for the better. And anybody who's criticizing him right now, and for good reason, they're still rooting for the guy. Like, Saturday night, that could have been a springboard, and all of a sudden, 2 days later, you turn around, you see the same problems persist defensively. And that's what's made this season such a head-scratcher for me, is the offense, more or less. Like, I understand some people have a high expectation based on what Volpe was billed as, but more or less the offense has been the same. Add a few RBIs because he's in a really good offense, but the offense has been the same. It's the defensive regression that was totally unexpected. At a bare minimum, you expected him to be shorthanded at shortstop. At a ceiling, you expected a Gold Glove shortstop. And he hasn't been close to that, and that's something that at a minimum needs to correct, because I think more or less we know what to expect with the bat now and offensively, but at shortstop, left side of the infield, ball needs to be caught, or else in these divisional games, these big games late in the season, playoff games, Yankees just aren't going to win with such a small margin for error.
We're talking with the great Emmanuel Brabari from WFN, New York Yankees Radio, and voice, of course, of Siena men's basketball coming up in November here on Big Board Sports, 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio, and the free 104.5 The Team app. Emmanuel, realistic expectations for Cam Schlittler on the bump tonight. Hasn't pitched in almost 2 weeks' time. He looked pretty good against Seattle, going against the Toronto team that's red hot and has won, what, 10 or 11 in a row at home. What do you think? How do you think that Schlittler will do tonight on the bump in his second career start?
That is the great unknown to me. I'm trying to project it in my mind. And you think about a first big league start. He passed that test with flying colors. His stuff looked electric. You understand why they're so high on him. But then he gets pushed back. You also have the All-Star break factored in. And I always look at, you know, the first start, you have your adrenaline pumping, you're running high, you're maybe overthrowing a little bit. That's why we're seeing 100 maybe instead of 98 from Schlittler. And he's like somebody, when they make a big league debut, I look at it the same, somebody comes off the IL. Like, the start one is typically pretty good. Start two, maybe you lose some of that adrenaline, and we see how things go. Maybe it's a little shaky. And start three is a really good barometer. So not only was his start two delayed, but now you're facing Toronto, as big of a spot as you can find in late July. You know, the Yankees are four games back in the division. You don't want to fall five back. You don't want to lose six consecutive games to Toronto. You don't want to lose the season series. One more win for Toronto, and they have the season series wrapped up already in late July. So it's a big start. You're facing back Scherzer. You would hope he doesn't put too much stock into who he's facing on the opposite side, but how about that for your second big league start? It's a big stage, so I really don't know what to expect. But what we do know is this guy's got electric stuff, and that popped in start number one.
Are there, what, 60 games left in the regular season?
62.
Okay.
So 62 after game one, number 100 last night.
Yeah, so still a long way to go here, and obviously the Yankees are going to be in the playoffs. So I get we ride with the regular season stuff, but to me, Emmanuel, I'll be really locked in a whole lot more when we reach the postseason, to be honest with you.
Hey, look, I love the pragmatic view because we have so many we ride the ups and downs, as you said, of the regular season, and it's part of what makes it exciting. But I think the more you watch and the more seasons you take in, you can take more of the view that you're having, because I'm looking at this game as a huge one tonight from a divisional standpoint. Like, it's going to be really hard for the Yankees if they go five back tonight. The Blue Jays have the season series. Then think about it. Rest of the season, you got to outpace Toronto, a hungry and hot Toronto team, by six games just to win the AL East. But if you're just looking at it, get in the dance, which is what matters in this day and age, right? There's no one formula to win the World Series. Yeah, like, there's 62 games to go. The trade deadline coming up. I would bet this Yankee team is going to look different in some significant ways in 10 days than it does right now. So there's a lot of baseball to be played, and 62 games add in the trade deadline, that's a lot of shift in the makeup of this team.
Emmanuel, what do you know about the Siena men's basketball team right now?
What I know is that Gavin Doty's wearing number 4. So that's a pretty big development that he's taken Mark Brown's number.
Yeah.
That's the latest big news and development, which I find really cool, that there was sort of that, all right, let's unretire this for a season, and also make that whole video where Mark Brown's delivering a message to Gavin Doty. I found that really, really cool. But in terms of the team, I like the depth. I like the additions via the transfer portal. This freshman class, as we heard from last year, was already highly anticipated, and now we're going to see it. But that's in addition to a veteran-laden team and some returners. Like, I think it's pretty rare in the MAC that you have the returners that Siena does, and key returners at that. So I'm liking the shape of this team. We'll see how it gels. We'll see how it meshes when it's all said and done. But I think the talent is way deeper. I think depth was a big problem last year when they lost Marcus Jackson and trying to piece that together late in the season with minutes. I don't think that's going to be a problem this year.
No, and I agree with you. In today's age of college athletics, these teams look drastically different from one year to the next. I mean, I'm trying to figure out UAlbany's team, and they get literally 10 new faces. But I think Siena, to your point, was able to retain some of their key guys from last year and then bring in some new, and be interested to see how Jerry McNamara rolls in year number two, and that'll come up in a hurry too. But lots going on, Emmanuel. We enjoy your work. Congrats on everything you got going on. Busy man, and we appreciate you joining us for a few minutes here on ESPN Radio in Albany.
Yeah, thank you guys. Always appreciate having me.
Thanks, Emmanuel. Emmanuel Barbari with us here on Big Board Sports.
That's all right. Good stuff. Huge game tonight. Huge.
See, I disagree with that.
Of course you do.
All right, we're back on Big Board Sports. NFL training camps opening today. College football camps opening momentarily as well. And we'll be closing in on the start of a new season. And for UAlbany, it'll be a road trip to Iowa to begin the season. Max Chadwick, our guy, college football for Pro Football Focus, joins us here on ESPN Radio in Albany. Max, how are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
I'm good, man.
We're good. Thanks, Max.
Good. Are you ready to get this thing rolling on the college level?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, I'm fired up. I think it's going to be an interesting year with the big boys at the top, and it might start with the school that I went to back in the day, and that's Penn State. They seem to be a team this year with James Franklin. They've been crying for a national championship at Penn State under Franklin, and maybe this is the year with this team that he makes that happen.
Yeah, it feels like their best chance, and I can't even tell you how long for Penn State. It feels like they're one of the top three or so teams in college football right now, and absolutely a national title contender. I mean, really, look at last year's team. Yeah, they lost Abdul Carter and Tyler Warren, who were two top 15 picks, two superstars. But other than that, the whole nucleus of the team is back for another year or two. So I think Penn State is absolutely a national title contender. I think right now they're probably the Big Ten favorite right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But, you know, but then there's always Ohio State, and they seem to be have it rolling right now. How good were the Buckeyes? Are they reloading for this coming season?
Yeah, I think they're still a top playoff contender for sure. I think they're still a top five or so team probably in college football. I don't think it's a national title contender, though. I don't think the team's going to go back-to-back. They do still have the two best players in the country, and Jeremiah Smith and Caleb Downs, but I have a lot of question marks with their trenches right now in the offensive line and defensive line. So they should still be one of the best teams in the country. It should still be a playoff team for sure. But this is probably a team that makes the quarterfinal round or maybe the semifinal round. I don't think it's the national title contender.
Chad, who would you say right now are your national title contenders?
I'd probably say Clemson is my favorite right now, and then I'd put Penn State, Texas, and I might even sneak in Alabama too. I think Alabama's got a question mark at quarterback, but everywhere else is pretty loaded. Those are the four I'd probably say are the top four right now.
Talk some college football with Max Chadwick from Pro Football Focus here on Big Board Sports 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio, and the free 104.5 The Team app. Max, how about a team I root for in the Notre Dame Fighting Irish that obviously knocked off Penn State last year in a thrilling game to get to the national championship, Marcus Freeman, and making Notre Dame, I guess, more likable, dare we say, right? And with the culture he's instilled, how good do you think Notre Dame will be this year coming up in 2025?
Yeah, still really good. I put them in that grouping with Ohio State as for the next tier after those four I just named right there. I think Notre Dame, you know, the reason why they made the national title game was their elite coverage unit and their elite run game. Both those should remain true in 2025 with Leonard Moore coming back, a really good secondary, probably top three secondary in all of college football. And then the best running back in college football is back for another year, too, and Jeremiah Love with a more experienced offensive line, too, as I think it's a top 10 offensive line in the country. So, you know, their kind of blueprint from last year is the same as this year, and we'll see if the new quarterback, C.J. Carr, can give them a little bit more as a passer than Riley Leonard did.
Who's the best quarterback in the country?
As of right now, I'd say Cade Klubnik from Clemson. I think he's the best quarterback in America, but that's only because we haven't seen Arch Manning play enough yet. I think there's a really good chance that he could be the best quarterback in America by season's end.
When you look at Texas, where do you have the Longhorns? They got a kid named Manning, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's still, like I said, it's still like a top four team in the country. I think this is probably the SEC favorite going into next year. And, you got Arch Manning, who I think will be an upgrade over Quinn Ewers, who I thought held them back at times last year. It's a very young offense, you know, brand-new offensive line, really, and some young pieces in that receiving core. But that defense is absolutely loaded. It's one of the best defenses in the country. And now you improve that quarterback, in my opinion, Arch Manning. I'm excited to see what Texas can do next year. Maybe they could win a national title finally.
Max, I'm not going to ask this question because they're my NCAA Dynasty team, but I will because they're my NCAA Dynasty team with my buddies. I got Arizona State in a random draw with my friends, and obviously they lose Cam Scatabo, the NFL. Sam Levitt comes back. Jordan Tyson as well, fast slot and really just a fast overall receiver for them. Arizona State, you know, some people say they snuck in but, you know, earned it by winning their conference to get in last year. Do you think Arizona State can somehow go back-to-back and make it back to the playoff, or you think this year they might just miss out?
No, definitely. They still have a chance to make the playoff, absolutely, because the Big 12 is so wide open. I believe the favorite to win the Big 12 right now is plus 500, and I believe it's Kansas State who's the favorite. So, I mean, 5-1 odds for the favorite to win the conference is very long odds. Just kind of shows how wide open that conference is. So Arizona State is absolutely one of the top contenders, and they have the best quarterback easily in the conference in Sam Levitt, and the best wide receiver in the conference easily and Jordan Tyson, and one of the best head coaches in Kenny Dillingham. With all that, yeah, they absolutely have a great shot at going back-to-back in the Big 12.
All right, how about Heisman Trophy candidates this year? Give me a couple that you think are going to be definitely on the list?
I would throw the betting favorite is Arch Manning right now. You got to remember it is a voter voted on award, so people will be looking, I think, for any reason to give Arch Manning that trophy next year. I think he will be one of the best quarterbacks in the country, and I think Texas will be one of the best teams in the country. That's usually a recipe for a Heisman Trophy, at least finalist. The other one I'd throw out there, too, is Cade Klubnik. I think for the same reason, he's going to be, like I said, I think right now he is the best quarterback in America, and I think he plays for the best team in America, too. So I think those two reasons, I think Cade Klubnik and Arch Manning could both put up huge numbers next year, and it should be Heisman finalists.
Does Alabama bounce back?
Yeah, like I said, I think they have a loaded roster. The only question mark is that quarterback, but Ty Simpson is a former five-star recruit that's out of the bench for 3 years. You never really see five-star recruits do. He might fit that offense better than Jalen Milroe did, honestly. So Alabama's got an elite offense around him with a great offensive line, and Ryan Williams is a star receiver. And then, in my opinion, the best defense in college football, too. Alabama is absolutely going to bounce back and be a national title contender, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, ready to roll. Should be a lot of fun. Nothing better than kicking off that college football season. Is there a big headline game right out of the gate that I'm missing or don't know about?
I would say the two that I'm really looking forward to watching week one are Ohio State, Texas, obviously. You got brand new look Ohio State team coming off their national championship against Texas, who's looking to win a national title. Two new quarterbacks, two in Arch Manning and Julian Sain. That's the most must-see game I would see. And then after that, you got LSU Clemson. That is a massive game for both teams, too. And I think whoever, if LSU wins that game, they can really show, like, hey, we are legitimate contenders this year. And Clemson is just trying to prove that, like, hey, we are the best team in the country now. So I think LSU Clemson and Ohio State Texas, those are the two must-see games of week one, in my opinion.
And Penn State and Oregon early on in the season at Happy Valley.
Yeah, the whiteout game, too. It's a night game. Thankfully, it's not a big noon game, so you can finally see the whiteout in a massive game like Oregon. And that's going to be a huge game for both Penn State and Oregon as they try to win a Big Ten title next year.
All right, fair enough, Max. We'll check in with you throughout the course of the season, if that's okay with you. Do a great job, and we like to get a little national college football flavor going here on Big Board Sports.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Max. Max Chadwick, college football for Pro Football Focus.
Did you call him Chad in there once?
Did I call him Chad? Max? Max Chadwick? At hour number three on Big Board Sports, Roger Wyland, Michael Johnson Jr., Hunter DePace is across the glass as always here on this Tuesday. And the baseball season rolling on here, about 60 games left in the regular season. And then the season that matters the most, the postseason, will be underway. Will the Boston Red Sox be in the postseason? Let's ask Howard Herman, veteran writer, longtime writer for the Berkshire Eagle, and a friend of this program's on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. Howard, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, guys. So before we talk about that, has anybody ever seen a walk-off catcher's interference?
No, I really have not. We just played a sound cut with Alex Cora, who said they got it right, though. It was the right call, it's the rule, and they got it right. Did they get it right?
They absolutely got it right. The only question I had, and it was a question Lou Merlone brought up on the Nesson broadcast last night, and I heard the replay of his question, is it was a check swing. He was pulling back. So I don't know if that it obviously doesn't change anything, but the batter was not swinging through on the catcher's interference.
Okay. Yeah. I did look, you're right.
But I've never seen it before. Probably never see it again.
I was going to say, Howard, one heck of a way for a Boston team to lose that game.
Not surprising. Nothing they do surprises me. They're still, the number three team in the wild card right now. They're not very far behind Toronto in the American League East. They're still in the thick of things. I think what happens over the next week will determine what Craig Breslow does by the end of the month, which is the trade deadline. They've got two more games against Philadelphia. They are home to the Dodgers this weekend, and then they go to Minnesota.
Yeah.
So if they end up coughing up the proverbial hairball, they might be sellers at the deadline instead of buyers.
Wow. And this on the heels, Howard, of a 10-game winning streak going into the All-Star break, but then the tough schedule coming out. The Cubs are pretty good. You lose two or three there. And then obviously now Philly, and then you see the Dodgers right after that. Boy, all of a sudden you go from a riding high of a 10-game winning streak and sweeping the Tampa Rays.
Yeah, and it's funny. I was thinking about that when the discussion started coming, and I read somewhere where something similar happened. They didn't have a 10-game winning streak going into last year's All-Star break, but they were on a pretty good run. And then they come out of the All-Star break and lose a bunch of games. So I don't know if it's an All-Star break thing or what it is, but I think tonight's game is really important for the Red Sox, coming off of last night's soul-crushing loss. And it's the kind of, if they can come back, if they can come back and win tonight, shows you that a bad loss isn't going to really impact them coming down the stretch.
What's the what's the pitching matchup tonight? Richard, ooh, is it Richard Fitz?
Yes. Yeah, new guy came up. You know, he's sort of like the fifth starter right now.
Wow.
You know, I suspect they're probably going to try to, you know, go, you know, stud against stud over the weekend, because with the Dodgers coming in, you know, they are, you know, a really good team, arguably the best team in the National League, and you want to have everybody ready for that.
Talking some Boston Red Sox baseball with our guy, the great Howard Herman from the Berkshire Eagle, here on Big Board Sports 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio, and the free 104.5 The Team app. Howard, I want to ask you about, in the starting rotation, Garrett Crochet gets all the headlines, deservedly so, but Lucas Giolito and how he has been since coming back from missing all of last year in the beginning of this season. A little up and down. It's been a lot of good, and there's also been some bad in there, too. How would you best assess Lucas Giolito's performance so far this season with the Sox?
I think especially the last several starts, he's been on point. I wrote about another member of the rotation. I don't mean to get away from that, but I wrote in a column 2 weeks ago. I was at Fenway when Colorado came in. And I said to somebody, and I wrote that, well, before that, that the two key guys for the Red Sox the rest of the year are going to be Rafael in the field and Brayan Bello. And if they perform like they've been performing lately, the Red Sox are going to be just fine. Bale's been outstanding. You know, I think the high tide raises all boats here. Because Giolito and Bayo have been really good behind Crochet, who might win the Cy Young Award this year. I'm not sure. But, you know, but Buehler pitched well the other night, you know, last night, you know, and if they can get all four of those guys, you know, on the same page, they won't need to make any sort of a move as far as the starter is concerned.
What about the division as a whole as you look at it right now and you have a handle on it? Howard, are you a believer in the Toronto Blue Jays, who've now opened up a four-game lead on the Yankees?
I am and I'm not. I so much of this is going to depend on what happens between now and the end of the month, Roger. You know, if the Yankees or the Red Sox pick up a starter who, with control and an infielder, that could flip very quickly. If nobody makes a move in that division, then I'm higher on Toronto. But I don't think they're going to make too many moves, and I think the Yankees are going to make several. And I suspect if the Red Sox can take the Philadelphia series and take the LA series, I'm not even suggesting sweeping them. Then they will be buyers next week.
All right. Well,
and I think that's where it all, you know, it's all going to come down in the last 2 months of the season to what teams do at the deadline. Because if nobody makes a move in the division, then Toronto's still a little bit, just a hair better than everybody else.
Yeah. Well, we got our local guy, Jeff Hoffman, who was his 25th save last night. So We can play up the local angle here in the Capital
sure
Region with the Shaker High School grad Jeff Hoffman having a pretty good season.
He is, you know, and the one thing I've talked to baseball scouts over the years, and they think guys in the Northeast, at least a lot of scouts who are based in the Northeast, think that teams overlook guys up here because they don't pitch all year round. They're not playing in multiple tournaments in December and January. A lot of the high school kids are multi-sport athletes, which I think actually probably helps those kids because they're not, you know, where their arms aren't wearing out quite as quickly. And as one scout said to me, you know, these kids love to play because they can't play all year round. So when you get them, they're really chomping at the bit to go. And I think a lot of teams miss the boat when it comes to drafting and signing guys out of the Northeast.
Well, I will say this: it is literally crunch time for Boston to be a seller or to be a buyer. And you're right; we're going to find out. They got a couple of more with Philadelphia, and then the Dodgers. That is a kind of a gauntlet little schedule there. I had the 10-game winning streak. I was encouraged by that. I think Boston fans were not so much with a couple of those sweeps. Was against Washington, and then. Was it the White Sox? I think they swept.
They swept Washington. They swept Colorado. Arguably two of the worst teams in baseball.
Correct. But then Tampa woke me up. I'm like, okay, all right. That's a pretty darn good job there. But now you lose two out of three over the weekend, and now you get beat last night, and tough pitching matchup tonight. I don't know.
Well, it's something. A fellow I know who manages one of the summer college league teams around here once said, everybody's got talent. It's who grinds is the difference between wins and losses. And if you're not grinding, even a team like Colorado, those guys are major league players. They may not be as good as your major league players, but they can beat you on a given night. So you've got to be ready. And they were at that point. They were on target. I was at the Colorado series, and they were on target. They hit everything. Their pitching was solid. Their defense was good. And that's the way a good team needs to play consistently. You can't just, and you know this, because you've coached kids for years, you just can't roll the ball out and expect them to win.
No, very true. Very, very true. Howard, always a pleasure to hear from you, my friend. Keep up the great work with the Berkshire Eagle, and we will talk soon.
Thank you, gentlemen. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Howard.
Howard Herman from the Berkshire Eagle.
He's the best.